This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Essentially what it does is it forces us to make really difficult choices about where we can work. It's all the international and local NGOs who are operating in this space, as well as the big UN agencies, because all of us are feeling the squeeze.
That was Jeremy Taylor, Regional Advocacy Advisor for the Norwegian Refugee Council. Details coming up also. We have more on today's World Refugee Day. And a Commonwealth Observer mission has arrived in Sierra Leone ahead of Sunday's election. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Today is World Refugee Day, designated by the United Nations to honor people forced from their homes. Despite a growing refugee crisis and a shortage of funds, aid groups are stepping up efforts to ensure that some of the world's most vulnerable people find protection and safety. More than 110 million people around the world have faced threats so dire, war, disaster, climate change, disease, hunger, that they had no choice but to flee their countries with their families, in some cases with nothing more than the clothes on their backs. Millions more are displaced in their own countries, unable to return to their communities. In our program today, we join the world in celebrating the courage of people who have made the gut-wrenching decision to flee. We talk with refugees and aid agencies to bring their stories to the world. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says there has been a huge surge in displaced people, who now number about 110 million. At the same time, funding has fallen. Jeremy Taylor is the Regional Advocacy Advisor for East Africa and Yemen for the Norwegian Refugee Council.
If we look at this region, we've seen continued conflict and instability across a number of countries. Fighting still continues in Somalia, compounded by an incredibly devastating drought. We've seen violent conflict in Ethiopia that's seen almost 2 million people internally displaced within the country. South Sudan has remained deeply unstable. And then, of course, in recent months, we've seen this absolute catastrophe of a conflict emerging in Sudan. And I call it that because it has such a big impact on the countries around it.
A new report from the international charity World Vision reveals that hunger and violence levels experienced by refugee and displaced children also continue to increase. Taylor says with critical levels of underfunding, emergency aid groups are forced to stretch resources to cover more displaced people. And he says the gap between the needs and the funds has grown every year.
Essentially what it does is it forces us to make really difficult choices about where we can work. It's all the international and local NGOs who are operating in this space, as well as the big UN agencies, because all of us are feeling the squeeze, as it were, and if we're just not able to program to our maximum capacity and we're not able to reach everyone that we need to.
Geoffrey Shikuku is Kenya Director of Jesuit Refugee Service.
This is an appeal we would want to make, that continuous advocacy for inclusion of refugees into national systems with international partners coming in to support the hosting country, because it's not sustainable to keep refugees in camps with less food, whereas there could be a population that is very productive if they're allowed to live and work in the host country. But also sustaining support to these refugees and giving them an opportunity to go to school.
On the occasion of the World Refugee Day, the UN Refugee Agency celebrates the courage and hopes of the millions of people forced to flee war, violence, and persecution. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Refugees are people who are forced to leave their home community in order to preserve their own safety. My colleagues here at VOA, Nadia Taha and Jackson Mfunganyi, once upon a time were refugees living in camps.
For me, being from Sudan, specifically from Darfur, the reason of being refugee or internal displaced because of the war of Darfur started in 2003. At that time, my child, I was in high school. I was just still in my childhood. We just started the school, and then the disaster started, and then most of my family, my grandma, most of the people, they had to leave their village and live in IDP's camp. And some of them, which is they are close to the border, they have to cross to Chad.
So now let's go to Jackson.
Yes, so personally,
what's your story, sir?
So personally, I was a refugee because my parents were refugees. So I was born in a refugee camp. They crossed over from Rwanda, where there was conflict going on and they were being targeted. They crossed over with thousands of others who, you know, also were being targeted with them. They lived in a camp. They were given a camp or provided land by the Ugandan government.
Interesting story, Jackson, the camps and everything. So how did you manage to go from there to here?
So it was very easy to transition. Even though we were refugees in Uganda, we were able to access all these different, you know, resources that were available to citizens like everybody else. So I went to school there. Then we were able to return to Rwanda after the genocide in 1994. And then after that, that's when I moved to the U.S. After a couple of years.
Actually, my situation is a little bit different. Being I went to school in Khartoum, a law school, and I thought that I will finish my school peacefully and then I start working in a law firm or something. But I end up like being kicked out of the city because of reporting to other media at the same time when I was finishing the school. And I was targeted by the NIS people, security intelligence people for Sudan. So but I had to go to Nairobi and start working with Sudan Radio Service as a reporter. From there, I managed to come to United States for a fellowship, and then I had to seek refuge because I had no place to go back because my home being destroyed, and I was like targeted by NIS people. So I become an asylee here or a refugee in United States. Before I've been in Kenya. And Kenya also, one of the country has a lot of Sudanese and South Sudanese refugees. We call them survivors because they come there and they have to seek for education, learn language, and then to look for opportunities.
And that's a very interesting story there, Yeheyes, is that, you know, even it is a story of where you find yourself in multiple places at different points in your life, being a refugee. You know, you're a refugee in one place and then you have to move from that place and go to another place as a refugee.
And then they have this environmental refugees now we see in Somalia, the floods.
Yes.
Hunger.
Yes, absolutely. Climate change refugees really, and this is one of those issues. When we talk about refugees and internally displaced, we tend to focus on conflict. But this new phenomenon of people leaving, and it's getting worse and worse over the years. In the last couple of years, the Horn of Africa, for example, we know that there have been thousands of people have been forced from their places because of El Nino.
And then you overcome all these obstacles and you come to Europe or to the United States. And then you have these politicians in the United States. Let's say they whip up this hatred towards refugees with the former president, you know, the invasion rhetoric. And then we have the same thing in xenophobia in South Africa.
Right.
So refugees sometimes, the battle is still ongoing.
Absolutely.
Where does it stop? Actually, now Sudan, with a very worse situation in Sudan, a lot of people are trying to come to United States through Latin America. I have my cousin just arrived a few weeks ago. She was coming for 26 days to arrive to United States.
America has been very generous with refugees over the years. They have, you know, resettled so many people. People have restarted their lives in this country. But unfortunately, over the years, we've seen this, you know, being used as fodder, as being scapegoated by politicians who just seeking for, you know, just they want to, they're seeking political power and using that as leverage to gain votes. Yeah.
So the theme of the 2023 World Refugee Day is hope away from home, a world in which refugees are always included. Do we see a light at the end of the tunnel here?
Actually, for me, the only hope I saw after I saw the Chadian president, Mohamed Dibi, who went to actually receive the refugees from the borders, and they tried to give them food for 3 days. That's one of the hopes. I think the governors or I think the countries, they're supposed to have this kind of initiative to help the refugees not to cross your borders.
My message, again, I think that message resonates either through me or, you know, I think there's hope. There is hope as a refugee. If anything that I can tell a young refugee person that is going through it right now is there's hope. At the end of the day, you go through suffering. There's a lot of unknowns. But when you finally resettle in a place of safety, there's hope.
That was VOA's Nadia Taha and Jackson Mfungani talking about their life experience today as we recognize World Refugee Day. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The United Nations Refugee Agency has pledged its support for Malawi's move to resettle more than 50,000 refugees and asylum seekers currently living at the overcrowded Zaleka refugee camp in the central part of the country. Malawi's government recently announced it had secured a new site in the northern part of the country to help reduce the number of refugees at the Zaleka camp, which was originally designed to accommodate 12,000 people. Lamek Masina has this report for VOA from Blantyre.
UNHCR Regional Director for Southern Africa, Valentin Tapsoba, pledged support of the move after meeting Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera in the capital, Lilongwe. According to a statement released after the meeting, Tapsoba said UNHCR welcomes the government of Malawi's commitment to improving living conditions and overall well-being of refugees living in the country by upgrading refugee settlements. Malawi set up Zaleka refugee camp in 1994 to accommodate about 12,000 people, but now it is hosting more than 50,000 refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, Burundi, Somalia, and Ethiopia. Ken Emmanuel Lukajo is the Associate External Relations and Reporting Officer for the UNHCR in Malawi. He says the government's relocation of about 8,000 refugees who have been staying outside the camp has strained the already scarce resources at the camp.
Life is very difficult. There's no enough water, there's no shelter. Even the children who are pulled out of school in the city are not able to enroll to the schools because there are not enough slots. So everything is not there. So, but we don't have the money to provide for the additional number of people that have been relocated.
Malawi started forcibly relocating refugees who were illegally living across rural and urban areas of the country last month after the expiration of the April 15 deadline the government set for voluntary relocation. In a statement, the UNHCR says that to date, approximately 1,900 individuals have returned to the congested Zaleka camp amid financial challenges the agency is facing in taking care of the refugees. The UN Refugee Agency says that as of 1st June, it has only received 15% of the required $27.2 million to adequately support refugees and asylum seekers in Malawi this year. However, the Malawi government says it has acquired land for a new resettlement site for the refugees in Chitiba district, north of Malawi, to solve overcrowding problems facing the refugees there. Ken Zikari Ngoma is the Minister of Homeland Security in Malawi. He told a press conference last week that the new settlement will also keep away potential criminals who enter Malawi under the pretext of being refugees and asylum seekers.
Which is why we are wanting to change the system now. We'll close Zaleka anytime and we'll open up a new site in Chitipa where we want to make sure that anybody who wants to enter Malawi should be examined before entering Malawi. Just like the way Americans do. No asylum seeker will get in and say, I will apply inside. You know, it is done at the gate. So we want to borrow American system.
The UNHCR says it stands ready to provide the necessary support toward the new site.
if the government said they have found a new site, UNHCR has no objection to that. As long as UNHCR is involved in the process, and then we assess the site, make sure that the site has enough water, the site is not prone to flooding, and the site is also not very close to the border. So if all the conditions are met, then UNHCR will not hesitate to support the process.
Malawi government authorities have assured to involve UNHCR in the site assessment process and collaborate to secure resources for the development of the new settlement. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
A senior Botswana minister has urged citizens to desist from calling foreign nationals by derogatory names, warning that it could lead to violence. Botswana is home to tens of thousands of migrants, the majority from neighboring Zimbabwe. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Speaking during an event yesterday that was organized to mark International Day for Countering Hate Speech on Sunday, Minister of State President Kabo Moroeng said citizens should shun hate speech targeted at other tribes and nationalities. Foreign nationals in most southern African countries are usually called makwerekwere, an offensive and xenophobic word. Moroeng says such actions could spark xenophobia, which has taken root in neighboring South Africa as citizens complain that foreigners are taking their jobs amid high unemployment. That often leads to clashes that turn deadly.
All of us here, we do not decide to be of which race or the other race. I mean, you were born Mukwena, you were born Zimbabwean, you were born Ghanaian, whatever. You did not decide, and then we call you Mukwerekwere. Huh? But this is not right. We really have to do something about this, especially to the innocent souls, our children.
Botswana's UN resident coordinator Zia Chaudhry warns that shortages of employment and high crime rates, among other factors, can result in increased incidences of hate speech.
All societies are vulnerable to rapid escalation of hate. When you have an economic downturn, when you have an increase in crime, when you have an election coming up, when you have those issues and others, that's when you have a space for hate speech to escalate.
The International Day for Countering Hate Speech is observed annually on June 18. The UN commemorates the day as a response to alarming trends of growing xenophobia, racism and intolerance. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
With Mali's demand on Friday that United Nations peacekeepers leave, there are worries the 10-year mission aimed at protecting civilians will unravel and the West African country will fall deeper into chaos. The UN mission known as MINUSMA has been curtailed by restrictions on air and ground operations since 2021, when the ruling junta partnered with the Russian private contractor Wagner Group to run security in the country amid an Islamist insurgency and threats of a separatist uprising. Joseph Sani, vice president of the Africa Center at the United States Institute of Peace, says the risk of civil war will undoubtedly increase if MINUSMA leaves.
Given the importance of MINUSMA and the role MINUSMA plays currently, it will create an important vacuum, and nobody knows who will fill that vacuum, and if it can be filled by the current Malian authorities. Because remember, MINUSMA plays, in addition to the protection of civilians, MINUSMA plays a political role, logistic roles. I mean, they supported the referendum last weekend, and they continue to train election officials. So they play a political role. They also play a role in the peace process, no matter how fragile that Alger peace accord is. So they provide some kind of guarantee of calm and stability and continuity. And they have a huge socioeconomic footprint, right? Let us not forget. They create direct or indirect, thousands of direct or indirect jobs, particularly for young people. So it's not just a security actor. It's a state actor. It plays an important role.
MINUSMA has not been able to achieve, though, all that it could do because of the restrictions that have been placed on it. Is there a chance that the recent Mali referendum will lead to changes?
The referendum is part of the plan, right? So it's just one milestone on the transition plan in itself. And even MINUSMA, so let me just back a little bit here. MINUSMA was, or still, the last key element of an important peace and security architecture that the Malian authorities are dismantling or getting out from. So you had the G5 Sahel, for example, was part of that key architecture, and the Malian authority pulled out of the G5 Sahel. You have the Barkhane operations, was asked to leave, and now you have MINUSMA. So gradually, the Malian authorities are dismantling or pulling out of a kind of regional, more deeper peace architecture. That's a big story here I think people don't see. And what it tells me is that there is a demand from the Malian authority to be on the driver's seat of their own security. Now, will they have the capability to actually fulfill that role? It's a wait and see.
That's Joseph Sunny at the U.S. Institute of Peace. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Damme in Washington. The head of the Commonwealth's Observer Mission to Sierra Leone from former Nigerian Vice President, Professor Yemi Osinibajo, says the group just has arrived and has already heard electoral complaints that must be thoroughly investigated. From Freetown, reporter Kelvin Lewis has the story.
Upon arrival in Freetown, Professor Osinibajo outlined the immediate goal of the team.
We've heard some of those complaints, and of course there are other complaints. We've heard those complaints, and we have only just arrived. But our position is that there must be consistent and continuing consultations with all the relevant organs, including the Electoral Commission. And we think that is important that these complaints are thoroughly investigated by the appropriate authorities and that remedy is sought and obtained wherever that can be done.
Professor Osinibajo outlined their role as observers.
But let me be clear. The Commonwealth Observer Group has no executive role. Its function is not to interfere with or direct in any way, but to observe the process as a whole and to make recommendations accordingly. We will observe the pre-election environment, polling day activities, and the post-election period. In particular, we will consider whether the conditions exist for credible elections, including a fair election environment, whether public media has been impartial, the transparency of the entire process, whether voters are free to express their will, and whether the counting and results process is transparent.
The 12-member team includes experts in various disciplines. They are expected to issue their first report 2 days after the polls and then stay until the end of the month. Asked what they will do in the event of a runoff, Professor Osinibajo says they will not run off because of a runoff. But even as the Commonwealth observers were preparing for work, a high-level meeting was held Monday evening not far from their hotel. The Political Parties Regulation Commission had brought together the main opposition APC party and the National Electoral Commission. The APC had called for the resignation of the entire board, whose members said they would not quit. The APC had written to the police to inform them they are planning a peaceful march yesterday, Monday. After a four-hour-long meeting, the PPRC chairman said they have asked the two parties to go home and come back Tuesday with a smaller team so that the negotiations can continue. APC spokesman Richard Conte says they are going to consult with their leader, but their position remains the same and they still intend to stage their peaceful protest. For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdullah Rahman, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.